You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And the Orioles have won the game!
They did it! They did it! They did it!
And they're going crazy! They're jumping on each other!
One of the most unbelievable finishes you will ever see.
And welcome to it. Thanks for being with us here on Orioles Magic, the podcast presented by Miller Lite. Brett Hollander and Jeff Arnold with you. And Jeff, it's great to see you with a little bit of a different background for some of our viewers right now for you. Where are you? In the woods?
Well, I'm in Pennsylvania. This is still where I've been doing the podcasts and other things that we're doing from. However, there was a little bit of a problem with my computer hard drive. I got a new one just before I left for spring training. The hard drive crashed, so have to send it back to the person who provided it. And so I am actually relocated downstairs, going off the iPad, which is mounted just to make it look a little bit better. And I'm sitting on a couple of different pairs of books right now to be a little bit, you know, to make it look a little bit better as far as appearance goes. My butt's not too sore at this point, and I'm happy to be with you for another week of the podcast.
That does sound pretty uncomfortable. I'm not going to lie to you. All right. Coming up as our guest today is someone you go back with many years, actually, throughout his time in the Orioles minor league system. And that is Stevie Wilkerson. Interesting guy who, you know, is really like a Swiss Army knife, the amount of things he can contribute to a big league roster.
This is the way that he really was the second year that I saw him in Frederick. I mean, the first year he was predominantly a second baseman, and then he played some shortstop. And then it was year two where they began moving him all around the infield and the outfield. I mean, it's funny to think that last year he led the Orioles in total games played in center field when he made his lifetime, according to him, lifetime debut in the outfield when he was with the Frederick Keys a couple of years ago. And I remember the first game he actually played in the outfield, which we talked a little bit about in this podcast, and he was playing in right field. The center fielder was Austin Hayes, and Wilkerson ended up making a diving catch in right field in the game. And also later on in the podcast, he talks a little bit about playing a variety of different sports. Some he does left-handed, some he does right-handed, but he's a freak athlete who can play all over the diamond, and who also now has got his very own pitching glove, something that he did not have of his own last year.
Clearly a freak athlete. That is a good way to describe him. He goes through the litany of sports he plays and played, and someone who could have played college football in a sports hotbed of Georgia, where he really came of age, and then to play ACC baseball at Clemson, being a star there, and now making it to the big leagues. This is a guy with 10 home runs last year, Jeff. 10 home runs, playing around the field, a switch hitter. But we're going to also talk to him about his four pitching appearances last year, including one where he got the save, first position player ever to do so, earning a save in a 10-8 ball game against the Angels in Anaheim on July 25th, a game that went 16 innings and lasted for over 6 hours and 15 minutes, a marathon game where Wilkerson was the last man standing and really mowed down the heart of that Angels order in the ninth inning, or in the 16th inning, I should say.
The last guy who he retired is going to be in the Hall of Fame, in Albert Pujols. And he's trying to retire Albert Pujols for the final out, throwing a fastball, or maybe as he would call it, a breeze ball, no faster than 56 miles an hour. And I can understand to a degree why it might have been so tough for the Angels hitters, because right before Wilkerson came on, yeah, they were staring at gas from Tanner Scott, who we know can reach 100 miles an hour or go over 100 miles an hour. And suddenly you're going from that to 53 to 56 miles an hour. I don't think it's any surprise that maybe some of those hitters, even a Hall of Famer, were held a little bit off balance.
And this is no knock on Tanner, but in that game, Tanner blew the save, ends up getting the win. But he allows 3 runs in his one inning of work. And Wilkerson goes 1-2-3 in his one inning of work. And by the way, in the game, Wilkerson lowered his ERA to 2.25.
Maybe he should go to pitching full time. No, but the thing is that, and I think most hitters would tell you this, and because it's so prevalent across the game today, which is everyone can hit velocity.
Yeah,
you know, people can hit velocity. Trying to hit 56 miles an hour, like, good luck. Like it's just
not in their timing mechanism.
No, and he even said it in the podcast how he remembers when he would face position players in minor league games and how Wilkerson, he's like, I never did well against those types of players. So you go to major leaguers who all they're seeing is, especially at that time in the game, maybe not the 16th inning, but end of game, 95, 96, 100. And then suddenly you go to 55 miles an hour. That's a pretty tough margin to make up. And maybe could explain why he went 1-2-3, because he just kept throwing in strikes.
All right, well, let's do it. Let's get to it. On today's episode, Stevie Wilkerson. And joining us right now on Orioles Magic, the podcast presented by Miller Lite, is Orioles super-duper utility man, Stevie Wilkerson, who puts the super in utility man, given what he did last season. Stevie, how are you holding up?
I'm doing well. How are you guys? Everyone good?
We're hanging in. It's great to talk with you. Before we get rolling to baseball and everything else, we do want to talk about your four pitching appearances last year, including becoming the first position player to earn a save in a 1-2-3 ninth in Anaheim, California last July, going through some pretty notable hitters. Tell us about that experience and getting the ball in a 10-8 game and closing it down like you were Mo Rivera.
Yeah. No, it was a wild game. I was doing an interview a few weeks ago and talking about it a little bit too. But up until the extra innings of that game, it was already pretty crazy. I botched the ball going back on it on the warning track and kind of misplayed it a little bit and put us down by a couple runs or a run, I think. And then the next inning in the eighth, I came back up and hit a game tying double. So it was pretty wild before extra innings. And then you know, we all know how the extra innings went for another 2 hours or something, and then you know, Hyder giving me the ball there at the end was it was pretty special. It was awesome, and it's almost even more fun to reminisce about. So yeah, man, it's an unbelievable memory.
When he gave you the ball, what did he tell you before you went out there?
So we had just run out of pitchers after Tanner came in throwing, you know, two innings for two consecutive nights, and we were completely out of arms. So when we came back into the dugout, he said, hey, you got the next inning, you good? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And and at that time the game was tied, and then VR comes up and hits the two-run jack, and Hyder, I was on deck, I think I was about to hit, and then I came back in, and he looked at me, he's like, you still got this? I was like, yeah, bro, let's go. So yeah, that's kind of how it went down, but it's pretty cool.
So you're throwing, you know, mid-50s, okay? What would be your – if you, you know, were just throwing from a mound and wanted to throw it straight, I mean, if you were from center field trying to throw someone out second base, what's the velocity on that?
To be honest with you, Brett, I'm not exactly sure. But I think I could run it up in the 80s somewhere, you know. I'm not going to hype myself up and say I can touch 90 or anything, but I think I could ramp it up a little big in the mid-80s, something like that.
So what would you call that pitch that we saw from you last year in Anaheim? Is that a knuckleball?
I know you're trying to set me up for me to say something silly here. But, no, I don't know. Gravity ball, breeze ball. You know, it's got a couple names.
It danced.
I don't know. Honestly, yeah, looking at it on video, it's kind of funny how it does move. But, no, honestly, I was just trying to float the ball over the plate. I had warmed up a few pitches, like, before my first outing in the batting cages in the tunnel. And I was kind of just flipping them in there and just seeing if I could throw it over the plate. And that was working. So I was like, that was kind of my approach, just throw it over the plate. And I think it progressively got slower and slower when I kind of saw how – because I know how hard it is to hit against position players. It's brutal. And the slower, the more difficult. So I was able to slow it down. And then when I got to about 53, I think that's as low as I could go. But, yeah, that was kind of my approach to it.
Is it true that Sevy called for a knuckleball too? Did he ask you to throw a knuckleball?
I don't know if he called for it or not that game. I remember Chance calling a changeup one time, and I gripped the changeup and threw it, and it was like 5 miles an hour faster than my fastball. So I think we just stuck to the no signs after that. But I'm sure Stevie, you know, he's a character. I'm sure he was throwing down a bunch of stuff.
So what is your history in baseball pitching? I mean, were you, you know, a pitcher in Little League, high school, college at all?
Yeah, I think the last time I threw legitimately one pitch in high school, I got a double play ball, my bad. But yeah, before that, I like, you know, Little League, I threw like everybody else, you know, everyone pitches then, but no formal pitching history at all. Been about, what, I don't know, 12 years since I had stepped on a mound before that, something like that, maybe longer, I don't even know.
Whose glove were you using? Whose pitcher's glove did you use, or did you just use another one of your gloves?
Yeah, no, actually, the first time I went out there, I wanted to at least act like, you know, fake it till you make it. I wanted to play the role and act like I was semi-legit, so I went back in the clubhouse, and I stole Jimmy Yacobonis's extra pitching glove. And then after the game in Anaheim, he ended up giving it to me. So that's my go-to.
Let's hope, Stevie, you have a long big league career in front of you. You know, you've hit 10 big league home runs. You hit 10 home runs in a season. That's a rare accomplishment for most professional baseball players when they get going. But do you think you'll tell that to your children one day, or grandchildren, or the fact you got Albert Pujols out with basically the game on the line in the ninth inning?
I think I'll tell them everything. But hopefully I can do enough in my career to where – the pitching will be the side note, not the front note, but you know, time will tell. So we'll see how it goes.
Okay, so you go two outs, and then Pujols steps up to bat, and you're throwing no harder than 56 miles an hour, and a future Hall of Famer steps in the box. So what are you thinking at that point?
I was like, man, this is Albert Pujols, you know. You know, it was really cool. I think looking back, you know, think more about, you know, holy crap, I was actually throwing a Pujols right there to get the last out of the game. And looking back on it, it's even crazier than at the time. I was kind of just like, okay, yeah, you know, it's Pujols. Like, I know that, but at the same time, like, what I got's what I got. I'm not going to change anything here. And so, yeah, I was able to just float a couple more in there. And, you know, it was definitely, it made it extra special for you know, him to be the final out.
You mentioned, Stevie, that it's hard for position players, for hitters to hit position players as pitchers. Why is it so difficult? What makes that such a challenge?
I think just because we're so accustomed to timing everything to, you know, nowadays hit close to 100 mile an hour fastballs. And when your moves and your mindset is set up for that, I think for some guys more than others, it's just a lot more difficult to adjust and be able to sit back and hit those, you know, position players when they throw. I know personally, I have had very little success against, you know, facing position players in the minor leagues and stuff. So I don't know if that's part of it. And also it's just like, you know, you look out there and you see a position player and you're like, damn it, man, like, here we go. You know, when you get out, you're going to be even more frustrated than, you know, because you think you should be able to hit this guy. But, yeah, I think there's many factors, but it's definitely difficult.
Sort of in that vein, where did the nickname Dr. Poo-Poo originate from?
I think Hyder, honestly. He said I dubbed myself Dr. Poo-Poo, but I think when they asked me after the first game what I was throwing, I think I said I was throwing 80 poo, like, you know, just basically saying I was throwing slow. And then next thing I know, like, someone was like, what's Dr. Poo-Poo? I was like, I don't know. And then I looked at Hyder's interview, and he was saying, you know, I was calling myself Dr. Poo-Poo. So, I don't know. Legend has it that I came up with it, but I think it was Hyder.
As you look back just to, you know, how many positions you played last season, the big leagues, is that a point of pride for you personally, Stevie?
It definitely is, actually. I take a lot of pride in getting my work in and being able to do whatever the team needs me to do, whatever position it is, whatever point in the game it is. So, you know, I think adding all those games in center field last year, you know, I was pretty proud of that, and especially not having done that before at all, ever.
Wow.
You know, it was rewarding to know how much I worked at it out there. And then, you know, I made some pretty good progress fairly quickly. You know, definitely at times, you know, I had to make some adjustments and had some learning curves, of course, but it's definitely, something I take a lot of pride in, is to be able to, you know, play whatever position, do whatever I'm asked of.
What was the most challenging aspect of playing center field for you? Because I remember your first game in the outfield in the minors, and we were in Carolina.
Right field.
Austin Hayes was playing center field.
That's right.
And you fast forward a couple of years, and you're in the center of the outfield.
You remember that diving play I made that game?
That was unbelievable.
actually, when Keith Bodie came up to me in the hotel lobby, we were about to get on the bus on the way over to the stadium, he told me I was playing right field, and a couple guys were, you know, around me at the time too, and we kind of thought he was joking, honestly. But yeah, that was the first time I had ever played outfield. And then, you know, over the next couple of years, I filled in out there here and there, which finally led to last year where I primarily played out there. So pretty crazy.
What is your spring training preparation before things were shut down, when you were kind of divvying up your time in a practice setting or pregame setting, infield, outfield, and even playing around both the infield and outfield?
Yeah, I did most of my work in the infield. You know, I think with the new staff, they've seen me play outfield a lot more than they've seen me play infield. So, you know, I think they would like to see me play infield a little more. And even in spring training, it was like I would practice for, you know, 75% of the days at second, you know, or whatever in the infield, and then come game time, you know, go and play outfield. So it was definitely divvied up, but since I had more time in the outfield last year, we definitely put a little more work in the infield this spring training.
I think I asked you this in the Masson spring broadcast that I did, but how many gloves do you have right now?
Mizuno hooked it up this year. They even gave me a pitching glove too, so that's pretty funny. But
so you weren't joking about it. You said, you're like, it's like, I got a new pitching glove and I'm practicing these balls. So it's true. Okay.
It's true. I asked them for it and I thought they were going to shut me down, and then I got one. So it's kind of cool. But I don't know, man. People are sneakerheads. I'm a glove head. I love gloves and breaking them in and having a bunch of different ones. So I don't even know, 10, 15, not a ton.
Steve, have more people asked you about pitching and earning a save, or that catch you made in right field final game of the season in Fenway Park?
As of recently, the pitching. I don't know if it's because, like, rebroadcasting games or, you know, whatever it is. But yeah, definitely lately pitching, but the catch was hot there for a little while.
Did you you appeared in games a couple of different times on the mound. Did you ever talk to Doug Brocale, get some advice from him, talk to other pitchers on the staff, like pick their brains at all? Or was it sort of just like, hey, Stevie, go in the game? And I'm like, okay, let's give it a rip.
Definitely more so, more the latter. I think any conversations with Doug, with Broke, or any of the pitchers were more comical than anything. And, you know, guys joking around, like, oh, you make it look so easy, you know, and hyping me up a little bit. So. No, more of a comedic relief for everyone than real conversation.
Let's go back to last year offensively for you. The 10 home runs. Were you surprised by that number? Getting to that double-digit number in a big league season?
I don't know. I wasn't surprised about it. I was proud of it, and I think I could have done better. But, you know, hitting double-digit homers in the big leagues is definitely an accomplishment. And, you know, yeah, like I said, I was proud of it. But, you know, as I've gone through it a little bit now and learned, you know, I think I could have done better. I think there's more in the tank. And, you know, I went through some – and every year you're going to go through them. But, you know, I had a couple tough months where it was like I got off to a hot start. And I think in May I hit, you know, four homers or something pretty early, and then – after that, you know, a little more sporadic, and and my hard contact was more inconsistent. So, you know, as you play more, you learn more, and be able to reflect on it and build on it. So, yeah, I guess I wasn't super surprised, but it was encouraging. And, you know, it's encouraging to know that I am capable of, you know, performing at a decent clip up there. And, yeah, like I said, I think I can improve on that.
Is the consistency tough because you're playing all these different positions, so you have to get your work in every day, someplace different, and then you also have to maintain two different swings as a switch hitter? Did that maybe affect the consistency a little bit?
I think it was tough to be consistent because it's baseball and it's really hard. And switch hitting is definitely extremely difficult, and especially, you know, looking back on last year, I didn't hit right-handed, you know, hardly at all, hit well right-handed. And so I was putting a lot of time into my swing, my right-handed swing and approach, and, you know, spent a lot of time thinking through things and working through things. So I don't really think that moving around defensively, you know, has any ramifications on offensive performance. I think you have plenty. We spend a lot of time at the field. You have plenty of time to get all your work in. So. So yeah, I think it's just a matter of learning and making proper adjustments, and you know, still when you step between the lines, that you got to understand that it's all about competing, and everything else has to be shut down. So, you know, it's all a learning process.
Stevie, how much contact have you had with teammates during this period, and how much are you looking to reach out and others reach out to you?
A good amount, you know, mostly just because we're friends and stuff, but. It's definitely good to keep up with everybody and see how everyone's doing, you know, make sure everyone's healthy and their families are healthy and stuff, and then, you know, just talk hypotheticals. And so we've all been, you know, keeping in, we have a group chat, and you know, at times it's busier than others, but early on it was very busy, but now it's kind of just here and there, and, you know, when we have our team meetings and stuff. But I think everyone, you know, keeps in contact pretty, you know, fairly often.
What's your daily quarantine routine?
Yeah, well, luckily, which was kind of the reason I had to come back to Arlington Heights from Sarasota. I stayed in Sarasota until the end of spring training, and then for another about a week longer than that. But yeah, fortunately, I have access to my facility up here, so it's closed, but you know, they're letting me do my training there, and you know. Being you know, making sure everything's cleaned after we're out of there and all that. But yeah, luckily I'm able to get all my training in. You know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday I do my strength stuff, and then baseball stuff afterwards, and then Tuesday, Thursday is more you know, just baseball stuff. And then the weekends sprinkling, you know, random stuff, hikes, bike rides. Actually haven't done much hiking yet, but I plan on it. You know, just staying active, you know, on the weekends. So that's about it.
How many days, weeks, ABs do you think you would need in a spring training 2.0 setting to really get ready for a big league season?
That's a good question. I think I could feel fairly comfortable rolling into the season after, you know, 30 ABs or so, maybe a few more. But, yeah, I think a couple weeks of getting your legs back under you, just, you know, volume-wise of ground balls or, you know, outfield work, whatever it is. Just, I think definitely a couple weeks to get your legs underneath you and conditioned, and, you know, maybe 30 real at-bats, and then, you know, stand in and bullpens and stuff to help with the timing. So somewhere around there, I guess.
It's not like spring training and however many weeks you were already in Florida didn't happen, right? I mean, I know it's been a while. It's almost like a complete do-over at this point whenever it gets going again. But it's not like it didn't happen, right? The work that you got in, the practice you got in, that happened.
100%. And honestly, I think it was still extremely beneficial because you work on all these things on the off season, in the off season, and when you take them into spring, you know, the original plan is for everything to work, and, you know, particularly talking about hitting and ideas and techniques or whatever it is, you know, you think everything's going to work, and then you get there and you say, you know, well, this worked for me, this didn't. So it was still extremely productive to have those at bats and have that little, you know, introduction back into, you know, real games and stuff. And so I kind of took what worked from there and what didn't, and then brought that, you know, into the quarantine with me, and worked on, you know, continue to work on what I think will work for me, and kind of axed, you know, some of the things that proved to not work. So it was definitely beneficial for sure.
When you think about the possibility of playing baseball in 2020 without fans, what does that make you think?
A lot. I think there's some cool opportunities in there. You know, I think more so this season than in previous seasons, a team with good chemistry and good morale and just a good cohesive group, you know, it might give you that edge that you need, because you're not going to be able to feed off of the crowd or, you know, the fan base you're accustomed to. So I think that there's definitely an opportunity for, you know, teams to come together and make a fun, like, it could be really fun doing this. And, you know, it's all about that group and that's it. So, you know, that's one thing. And then, I was watching the UFC fights this weekend, and, you know, it was totally different with, you know, the announcers, no fans behind them when they're doing their little side bits. I don't know what they're called or whatever, but the production was still cool and it was still really entertaining. And so I think if baseball, if and when we come back, it's still going to be fun for viewers. And I think for us, you know, we just want to play. So, so that's kind of how my stance on it.
And, Stevie, also Clemson, your alma mater, Tiger baseball. Name some big leaguers and professional ball players that you play with in your time at Clemson.
Yeah, I think right now we have five guys on big league rosters, or five guys that were in the big leagues, five or six guys that were in the big leagues last year. Mike Freeman with the Indians, and Brad Miller, who's been with a few teams, Cardinals last year, Dom Leone, Steven Duggar with the Giants, and someone I'm forgetting for sure. Spencer Keboom was with the Nationals last year. I know there's another I'm forgetting. Daniel Gossett's had a lot of time in the big leagues. And I was at Clemson with all those guys. So there's been a decent amount of guys that I played with at Clemson that have seen some big league time.
I've always been curious about this. So a high level of collegiate baseball, let's say, you know, ACC, Pac-12, SEC kind of thing. Does that have a minor league level? Like, is that high? What is that?
It's funny. Yeah, I knew you were going to ask that. It's funny, like, thinking back, because I remember after I got drafted and I was in Aberdeen, I remember calling my dad and being like, this is – totally different. Like, everything about this is different. And that was talking about the game itself, but also the environment and how you go about your work and everything like that. It was just a total 360 or 180, whatever the opposite is. But
it's quarantine, don't worry about it.
Yeah, whatever. I gotta start reading a little more again. But yeah, I guess, I mean, obviously, it's a huge step up from high school. So, I mean, I don't know, man. Yeah, you can maybe compare it to, like, one of the A-balls, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, like, especially pitching-wise. I think when you go to Double A is when the pitching, you know, takes that next step. And all those guys probably would have done really well in the ACC or whatever. But I guess that's the best comparison I could do. I know that wasn't a great job, but yeah, something like that.
You have lots of great stories, but my favorite might be the story about how you learned / decided to switch hit. Tell us the switch hitting story.
Way back. Okay. So when I first picked up a baseball bat, I was playing T-ball in the church league. And my dad's a good athlete. He played, you know, four sports in high school, but none of them were baseball. So I pick up the bat, and it was one of our first practices. And he goes, "Why are you hitting on that side of the plate? Everybody else is hitting on the other side." And I was swinging lefty at the time, and everyone else was hitting righty, you know. So I was like, all right, I don't know, you know, I'll swing righty. And so I started hitting righty then, and basically hit righty all through the little leagues and everything. And then in eighth grade, I was working with a buddy in the neighborhood who was playing in the minor leagues for the Tigers at the time. He played college ball at Vanderbilt, and he was in the minor leagues, the Tiger system. And so I go over to his house. He had a little batting cage in his backyard, and I started, you know, taking some lessons with him. And one day I was just messing around. I'd been hitting righty for years, and I picked up the bat and took a couple swings lefty. And he was a switch hitter too. And he goes, "Man," he's like, "that lefty swing looks better than your righty swing." I was like, "Really?" And he's like, "Yeah." And so I'd mess around, like, every, you know, we'd still mainly work right-handed, but we worked left-handed a little bit too. And because he thought something was there, you know. And so fast forward to high school, I thought I was going to play football in college. It was my passion. I loved it. And so the high school baseball season for me was basically just, you know, I played to have fun. And so my first baseball season, I would kind of just go into tryouts, and whatever side of the plate I hit better from in tryouts, I would just hit that way that year. So my freshman year, I hit right-handed. And then I remember tryouts my sophomore year, I hit a couple doubles left-handed. So I was like, okay, I'll hit left-handed this year. So I hit left-handed my sophomore year. And then I went back to right-handed my junior year. And then after my junior year, we won the state championship. And we had some other guys on my team. We were a really good team. And we had some other guys that were getting some looks from some, you know, big colleges, and you know, some pro scouts were there as well. So after my junior year, it was encouraged to me to, you know, I was encouraged to start switch hitting a little bit. So my senior year of high school, I finally started switch hitting. So a little abstract switch hitting story, but.
And your first passion at the time, or your passion at the time, was football. What position did you play? And yeah. Could you have played in college?
Yeah, I played quarterback in high school. And I could have played in college. I don't know how, you know, I don't know if I could have gone to Clemson. I don't know if that was in the cards, but yeah, I had a little game.
Okay, so you're a switch hitter, you throw right-handed. Now take us through all the sports that you play, because like there's some things that you do right-handed, and then there's some things that you do left-handed.
Sure. I played competitive tennis growing up, so I played that right-handed with a two-handed backhand, which is why I roll over so many balls to second base. and I played hockey. So I played hockey left-handed. I played roller hockey only till I was probably like 12 or so, but played roller hockey left-handed. What else did I play? Played football, tennis.
What about golf?
I used to hit my woods and my long irons right-handed, and then when I got around the green, I would switch over to left-handed because I had a little better touch left-handed with the wedges. So I'd switch over to left-handed, and then I'd putt left-handed as well. But now I'm back to everything right-handed, and I honestly should just go out there with a straight blade putter and see what works for that day, lefty or righty, because neither of them have ever worked. So I'm still trying to figure that one out.
It sounds like you're actually ambidextrous. I mean, there's no other way to figure that out.
But I'm not, though, because you watch me try to throw a baseball or a football left-handed, and it's not – I look like Jeff. It's not a thing. It's not pretty.
What's your golf handicap, Stevie?
High, bro. High. I'm not I look good out there. I wear a good kit, and I got a good swing, but I walk out of there in triple digits.
You always have the look down. You've mastered that.
I don't know about that. But, yeah.
Oh my God.
That's it. That's the sports story.
Well, what's the lineage of the name Stevie and the big change that happened a year or two ago officially?
Yeah. Actually, I came out of the womb as Stevie. My parents named me after Stevie Wonder because my mom's a musician. She's been singing my whole life. And so, yeah, I was named after Stevie Wonder. So I went by Stevie my whole life. And then it was probably Jeff that wouldn't let me change it to Stevie in the minor leagues. And he said, you're Steve. That's not professional enough.
The story I remember was the first year you came in, you were Steve. And then the second year you were in Frederick, you said, "Hey, I'm Stevie," and I thought you were kidding. Like I didn't take you seriously.
That's
and
then
you
up, explained, bro.
And then you explained. Well, I mean, you're a funny guy, yeah. So you tell me the story, and then I didn't think you were serious, and then you told me, and I was like, "Oh, now it makes sense." So I think
what I just said about you not letting me change it. It was actually when I was in college. I told the guy that did all our, did what you guys do and, our promoter and all that, stats guy, everything. I told him, I was like, "Can you put Stevie on the roster, please? Like, that's what everybody calls me." And then all of a sudden it's Steve on paper. I'm like, "That's weird." And he's like, no, it's not professional. I'm like, "Oh my goodness." And I don't care. I'm like, whatever, cool. So it was Steve on paper in college. And then, I don't know, I guess, when I got to pro ball, it was like some years it was Steve, some years it was Stevie. And then when I finally got that sheet of paper where they ask you, they're like, "What do you want your name to be?" And I'm like, "Finally, and I just put Stevie." And then they double checked with me. They're like, "You wrote Stevie, right?" I'm like, "Yeah."
Not professional enough. Do big league players get business cards? Do you guys get business cards that you have to give out?
Something like that, but they have our picture on it. And we're holding a bat.
Right, exactly. I think it's a good ballplayer's name, too. I know it's a musician's name, obviously, Thanks. The way it was used for you, but that's a ballplayer's name.
Yeah, I think I only know one other Stevie, and it's a chick, but whatever. Stevie Nicks.
Yeah. Stevie Nicks.
Either way.
It's a big one.
Now, you said you couldn't sing before. Have you, worked to try and sing to kind of, live up to Stevie Wonder a little bit?
Jeff. That ship sailed. I don't have the musical talent, unfortunately.
Does your mom still perform?
She does every once in a while. Yeah, she does. She sings, people still call her to sing for weddings or funerals, stuff like that. But, and she still sings at the church too. So, but not in the band anymore. I think she stopped singing in the band when I was in high school, but growing up, yeah, she was singing every weekend, Fridays and Saturdays. They'd have, company gigs. She played in this jazz band in Atlanta, and then, she sang out for a different band in San Diego, where I was born before that, and all her life, really. So it was good.
Now, you got married in the offseason. Did she sing at your wedding?
No, well, actually, she sang. So, yeah, we got married in January, but she sang, her and my uncle, who I literally grew up listening to them play the guitar and sing and, just sitting around the house and everything. But, they sang a song for us at the rehearsal dinner, and I think everyone at the table was in tears. So, we had to do it that night, and then the night of the wedding, we had a DJ. We didn't have a live band, so we didn't have a karaoke hour or a professional hour. So she sang for us the night before.
Well, congrats on the nuptials, and hopefully we're seeing you, Stevie, back on a ball field soon.
Yeah.
And a pitcher's mound.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about that. But.
That's when we'll know we're really back, when Stevie Wilkerson's nailing games down the ninth inning.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, we appreciate it so much. Thanks, Stevie. Best health to you and your family.
Thanks, guys. Really enjoyed it. Stay safe.
That was a lot of fun with Stevie Wilkerson, and you can just sense it. In the Orioles clubhouse, Jeff, he's kind of, I don't want to say the life of the party, that's cheesy, but he's a guy people rally around. They like to see his face.
He's one of my favorite people in the game. And since I've gotten into this, every time I go into the clubhouse, you never knew what you were going to get from him. He'd always find a way to make you laugh. And that, for me, is one of the coolest things about having the opportunity that I now have with the Orioles, is being to connect with the likes of Stevie Wilkerson and Brandon Kline and Trey Mancini and all these other players that I've gotten to know over the years. And Wilkerson is certainly one of my favorites because he is so much fun, and he is the ultimate teammate. I mean, when I was in Frederick, I heard our managers say this and a couple other players say this too, which is we just want him to succeed because he roots for everybody on this team. He wants them to be at their best. And by association, people want him to do his best. And so I think that's what was kind of cool about him closing out that game, picking up that save, because number one, obviously it's terrible to lose any game, but especially a 16 inning game. And then the fact that there's no pitching left, somebody has to go out there and get a couple of outs. They give him the ball and he says, let's ride. Let's make it happen. He goes 1, 2, 3. And now he'll be in the Hall of Fame and go down in the baseball history books for all time. So it's really cool. And just the way that he talked about the game in such entertaining terms and watching all the things on a more serious side that he did last year, playing all those different positions, going into double digits with home runs. I mean, last year was a pretty special year for Stevie Wilkerson, and hopefully he'll get a chance to build off of that in 2020.
Yeah, it certainly makes him a commodity, if you ask me, in today's game to have that sort of versatility. Jeff, I know throughout our many platforms with the Orioles, there's a lot of great content out there. Tell us about what's cooking right now.
Yeah, one of those is Birdland Insider. A new blog is available on Orioles.com. And like we said, it's called Birdland Insider. Insider content includes current and past Orioles magazine articles, photo essays curated by team photographers. There's some great photographs in the ones that I've had a chance to look at. Q&As with players, prospects, spotlights, and much more. For updates, visit Orioles.com/Birdland Insider or follow on Twitter at Birdland Insider. And I'm going to say from a personal perspective, I check Birdland Insider every single week. I read everything that is up there. The content is great. And it's also really cool for us to check some of it out. Brett, I saw Bill Stetka has done a little bit of work on this, and then some of the other great Orioles PR staffers have as well, going back and looking at specific games or seasons and kind of fitting for us, just because a lot of the podcast content that we have done so far has been looking at Orioles past. And not only do you get to read about some of it, but you get to see some of the pictures as well. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's really good content. And next podcast episode for us, Jeff, dropping on Monday, will be none other than number 22, Mr. Jim Palmer.
Yeah, he's got quite a history. Best Orioles pitcher of all time, Hall of Famer. I listened to a podcast that he did maybe 2-3 weeks ago with Buster Olney, and his recollection of literally pitch sequences and every little thing about the game continues to amaze me. It's going to be fun to get to be on the same team with him whenever we get underway. But I'm really excited about getting an opportunity to talk to him and hear some of his stories and also go into a little bit about that 1983 game where he got the win in relief.
Yeah, I believe Steve Carlton was the Phillies starter on that day. But to get into that and to get into his incredible baseball journey and time with the Orioles, both as a player and in broadcasting, that will be a lot of fun coming up on Monday on this very podcast. Until then, for Jeff Arnold, I'm Brett Hollander. Thanks for being with us here on Orioles Magic, the podcast presented by Miller Lite.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits. Make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.